This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 203 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, August 12th, 2015. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch. Marcus, here we are yet again for another week of WordPress shenanigans.
Yes, and it's been a heck of a week for WordPress. It sounds like today's show is going to be no exception. We're going to ride that train out for the rest of the time here in this episode, number 203, and we've got a great guest this week.
Would that be the crazy train or the pain train?
A little of both, probably.
And considering the guest we have on tonight, a little bit of the soul train as well. Right. We'll get into that. So, let's jump right into it because we got plenty of time here. I'm anxious to speak to our guest tonight. Marcus, go ahead and introduce him.
Well, what about you? Because you're the big Kiko fan. So
all right. I am.
Give it your best.
I am a big fan of Kiko's. Not as big as some other people, but yeah. I'm right up there. So our guest name tonight is a gentleman by the name of Kiko Doran. He's a father, musician, videographer, WordPresser, Prestige Conference co-founder, ENTP, which I have no idea what that means, BJJ practitioner, which has something to do with jiu-jitsu. He's an Air Force combat vet and organized WordCamp Minneapolis 2013 and 2014. And Mr. Doran, sir, thank you very much for joining us on the show tonight.
Awesome. Thanks, you guys, for having me.
What's ENTP?
It's the Myers-Briggs test. It evaluates you in like four different categories, like whether you're an extrovert, introvert, you know, like if you're a feeler, if you're it's pretty interesting to.
So I think what does ENTP mean? What is your score? Is it good?
Well, if they put it into one word, I often see like dictator. It's probably, I don't know. It's just like I'm like an outgoing, I guess I'm an extroverted person that really doesn't look at things from an emotional standpoint. It's pretty interesting when you start looking at it, like in comparing your relationships and then have other people that you know take the test and find out like where you're compatible, where you're not compatible, and then you look back at people you've had long-standing relationships with. And I think it shows some things that if you maybe would have taken the test right away that you would be like, oh, wow, what am I getting into?
So you put that on your business card or something?
No, I think people who know, though, people, like, they kind of know what it means. I found it on somebody's Twitter bio, and I didn't know what it was, and I looked up the four letters, and I was like, oh, interesting. Took the test, and
you put it on your Twitter bio.
Yeah, and then I had a bunch of other people take the test, and now when people take the test and they tell me, I put it in my iPhone, like, under notes, I just put their four-digit code, and then when I meet other people to take the test and they tell me, oh yeah, I'm this type, then I can like search it in my iPhone and it'll show me all the other people that have similar kind of personality traits that I already know to them. It's kind of interesting.
Well, I thought it was just an abbreviation that shows that you're in the enterprise.
Yeah, I'm an enterprise practitioner at WordPress.
So thanks for joining us on the show, and let's start back in the very beginning. To be honest, I don't, during this year and Prestige and talking to you on Slack, this is really one of the first years, probably the last few months, where I've kind of gotten to know who you are. The first time I ran into you or discovered you was Pressnomics, and I only knew of you because I've spoken to Nick, who operates Tech Vaults, and turns out that when you were in Minneapolis at the time, where he also lives, he currently lives, you were his mentor to him, and I heard a lot about you through Nick, and now I've had a chance to speak to you in person, and I could totally see how you could be someone's mentor. But how did you get involved in the WordPress scene?
Oh, the WordPress scene, it was probably, I guess, like 2008, 2009. I was playing in a cover band, and I was doing consulting, like just business consulting. I was doing a lot of work in the insurance industry, actually, at the time. But
what kind of really, cover band?
It was called Sellout Stereo. They're still out there doing it. It was like guys that I went to music school with right out of high school, and we just wanted to put together the best cover band of like anything that was like from our generation. It ended up being a lot of 80s, but we would even do like modern stuff. But
like, what was the crowd favorite that you guys just pulled off every time?
Probably like the end of the night, like Don't Stop Believing, something like that.
Journey.
Yeah. But like Snoop Dogg, Gin and Juice used to go over really good.
Nice. So what did you play?
What's that?
What did you play? What instrument?
In that band, I played bass.
All right. Okay, you're a bass player. That tells a lot. That tells even me even more than ENTP.
Yeah, but I went to school. I went to music school for jazz guitar, like in 92 and 93, yeah.
All right. Well, if you were a drummer, then, you know, you'd have a different persona I could recognize.
Well, they say drummers are the people that hang out with musicians, right?
Mm-hmm. All right, so continue. WordPress, I'm sorry.
So I was playing in this cover band, and I just quickly realized that, like, that was going to be the difference, like, to get our band to the next level. It was, you know, when you go back, like, pre that time, bands had, like, you know, press kits. You would do, like, photos and send these 8x10s to the clubs with a tape or a CD, depending when it was. And I just realized right away that, like, we wanted to make it, like, really hit right away. And, like, within the first year, we were playing, like, big weddings, you know, charging $6,000-$7,000 a night to play weddings. But I knew to do that, we had to put together like a great promo kit, and the place to do that was online. And another bass player I knew was telling me, he's like, oh, you know, I had built websites before, but he said, oh, you got to learn WordPress because that's the easiest way to do it. So I just started digging into it. And, you know, then I spoke at my first WordCamp in 2010, and it was the first Minneapolis St. Paul WordCamp. And that's pretty much it. I never really consciously decided to be part of a WordPress community. I just was using WordPress and spoke at a WordCamp, and then it all spiraled, you know, from
Would
there.
You say that that's a big conduit from just being a user of the platform to immersing yourself in the community is actually speaking at a WordCamp?
I don't think so, because what are there, like 70 WordCamps a year, and you know, how many people speak at them? You see the same people traveling all over the country speaking at all of them.
Right.
Like, you know, I think then you're only talking about a couple hundred people a year, and I think that WordPress probably brings far more than that every year into the you know, quote-unquote community.
Because I often wonder about that myself, because obviously I've got a weekly outlet here, and I've got another podcast that I'm on, but I don't speak at WordCamps. Because my philosophy often has been, well, I talk enough, and so it's time for somebody else to get a chance. But I don't know. Maybe that's different. So
yeah, I think you would hit on a different audience at a WordCamp. The thing that really amazes me is I've now organized two WordCamps, and the question I ask before, like at the opening remarks always, is how many people is this your first WordCamp? And the numbers, like I've never like actually counted them, but I would guess it's around 80% at both the WordCamps I did. And they weren't the first one in that city, so it was the second and third in that city, but there hadn't been one in 2 years when I started doing it. So 80% is
pretty
high.
Totally different audience.
Yeah, completely. And those people wouldn't know WordPress Weekly, you know, from any other podcast, especially now. It's just like, it's...
Well, thank you very much, sir, for the compliment.
Nice.
No, I mean, I don't mean it in a bad way.
Because we don't have bar tricks. I get it.
That's it, because we don't have bar tricks.
Yeah,
you know the story? Do you know the story, Kiko?
The bar trick story?
Yeah. Jeff and I were at WordCamp Orange County, and on two different occasions from two different people, they came up to us and said, hey, we love the show you and Jeff do. We love that bar trick segment. Like, wah, 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 wah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so, big-time listener, huh?
Buzzkill.
Yeah. So which one of you is Dre and which one of you is Brad?
I don't classify myself as either.
I think it's time to move on. So yeah. So would you consider yourself these days a WordPress developer? I mean, have you written any plugins or themes yet, or are you just strictly like a freelancer? I mean, what's your day job?
Well, my day job, I always like to say that that's what I do, and people say, what is that? And I say, well, what do you need? And that's what I do. I like to problem solve is what I really like to do. I've never actively pursued trying to get work as a WordPress developer, because I think that at that point you're sort of a commodity and people are coming to you with solutions already. And I like to be the guy to come up with the solution. So I'd rather find a business problem And, you know, I'd say 99 times out of 100, I end up using WordPress to solve that business problem because that's what I'm really comfortable with. But I do write themes. That's really not the focus of what I do. I do more plugin work, but I don't really do it from the standpoint, like, for me to build a plugin to solve your business problem and then take that plugin and make it work for a large segment of people, that's not something that I've ever gotten into. I built a theme, like, framework one time with a couple of people, Josh Broughton and Michelle Schultz, called, it's called the Spring Theme, and it's the idea that it's like a vanilla theme that you could then just bring style into, and it's all built in SaaS. And, you know, we took a couple of chances with some things with WordPress that maybe now, you know, a couple of years later, maybe we would do differently, but we've all used it on projects for clients, but I've never done it like something like, you know, like a Gravity Forms or EDD or something where it's just made to work for a lot of people. You have to think about it totally differently, like translation and things like that. You know, when you're just solving business problems, you don't really think about all those nuances of how could somebody use this or how, you know, how could 100 different people use this, which is a whole nother, you know, cat to skin. And it's just, I don't know, I never have really gone down that road too far because I don't have, you know, I don't have 6 months or something to work on something like that. I move on to the next business problem I'm working on.
So do you take something that's existing and just sort of mod it to work with that particular client's needs, or do you start from scratch?
Usually, I you know, at different times, it's been different solutions. I think everybody starts in this road, in this world where they think, oh, well, they need a calendar. Let me just grab a calendar plugin, and I'll just, you know, twist it into what I need. And I think that's how most people start that I find, but I the more I do it, like, I don't really need 99% of what any of these calendar plugins do, so I just build what I need because it's a lot easier than trying to, you know, twist it into submission. And if there's any nuances, it just, I have to learn all the architecture of that plugin to figure out how to extend it correctly, where mm-hmm. it's just usually often easier for me to just do it myself. I mean,
That's how you know you've advanced, when you're using all these solutions and realize, damn it, I don't need all this stuff anymore. I'll just make my own.
Yeah. Well, how did you acquire that skill? Because if you went to music school and you were a bass player in a band and then you just decided to use WordPress as far as your outlet for your band, how do you get to that, from that point to developing and modding your own plugins and things?
I sort of have a philosophy that every day I try to learn something. And not just with WordPress, not just with technology, but just in life in general. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of my jiu-jitsu mentality that, like, it's, you can't just learn, you can't just become a black belt because you want to become a black belt. It's like you have to suck for a long time and just pick up little nuggets all the way until you get there. But I just have, you know, I've hired a lot of people. I tried to build an agency at one point. I got to, like, 7 people, and it really, I found that it wasn't the direction that I wanted to go, and I didn't have, you know, a ton of funding to pay for this, so it was kind of a stressful situation for me to, mm-hmm. you know, when I started thinking about how many homes and how many cars and how many children I was responsible for, it just wasn't really the direction I wanted to go. I liked being a freelance consultant at the time, and when I hired my first designer was when it really hit home for me, maybe 6 months after that I didn't have enough work for him, that he didn't have, you know, design stuff to do all the time, that I was like, oh my God, I got to find design work. I got to go out and find design work. And that's when it kind of hit me, like, wow, now my job is to just find work to keep all these people busy. And this really wasn't what I wanted to do.
I've done the same thing with tons of outsourcers and things that were on salary. And it's that point where you wonder who's working for who.
Yeah, without a doubt.
That point, it's like, you know, do you work for your outsource people trying to get them busy all the time, or is it the other way around? So I completely concur with that.
Yeah, so I mean, for different people, different things will bring them happiness, you know, and the answers for me today is different than the answers were for me, you know, then 5 years ago or so.
You know, we were talking a little bit about this at Prestige, but during your time I'm trying to build a consultancy agency, you sort of learned an important lesson where you thought you had to hire a team and they would take care of everything for you, but then you ended up switching your role into having to manage the team all the time, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, like, if you're a freelancer, right? Say the three of us are freelancers and we get to know each other, we all live in the same town, and for some reason you two want to come work for me. The reason is every time that I found is that you're not comfortable negotiating money. That's why everybody wants to go work for somebody else, because if you have all the skills to do the design work, why do you need me? You need me to be that interface for money. And that's what it always came down to, is that people didn't want to, they didn't feel comfortable, you know, in my old sales days, it was like, ask for the sale. That's what it comes down to. It's like the close. You got to have that close, the suggestive close or the presumptive close, whatever. People just weren't comfortable asking for the sale. And then they weren't comfortable, you know, who gives the price first? Do I tell you how much it costs, or do you tell me how much your budget is? And people aren't comfortable negotiating those things. And that's what I always found. And when I'm building a business, a small business, people who aren't comfortable with money things, it's really not the people you want in a startup kind of situation either.
So one of the things I find interesting, which I don't know why, but it seems like, you know, from what I cover in the WordPress community, there are plenty of individual freelancers just trying to get by with a steady flow of work and through referrals. But then there's this other possibly or seemingly larger group of people who really enjoy working for an agency, and there's plenty of agencies to work for in the WordPress space, but how have you managed to overcome some of the challenges of just being an individual freelancer and just solving problems as they come up instead of working for an agency that can hand you over that work to keep you busy?
The idea of like being a developer at an agency, like I couldn't think of something more miserable than
that. Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, not for me, for my personality type.
Right.
I want to solve different problems all the time. I don't want to just build websites like day in and day out. I like doing videos for clients. You know, I like to build really web apps for clients, but the web app, the development part of it is small piece of the puzzle. It really comes down to getting to learn their business because they don't know what they need. I have a video on my company site, so InGroup Consulting, and I go through where I built. It's essentially like a contract generator for bands. So if you have a band and you have to book a gig, you want to have a contract saying, "Hey, here's the stipulations. Here's how we're going to get paid. What happens if it rains?" You know, the contracts can get sort of elaborate. And I was working with an agency that represented 23 bands. And they started as an agency representing one band. Probably one of the guys was in the band, and they were booking it. And then it grows. You get, oh, well, you're getting good gigs. And I've seen this happen because when we were booking our band, a lot of people, when we did our website, people wanted us to represent them. And we toyed with that idea too, but it wasn't, you know, that's a whole nother problem we could get into. But they grew to 23 bands, and the way it started was they were doing contracts in a Word document. And this is how probably a lot of people do their contracts as web developers. If you do 5 of them a year, you have a Word document, you open it up, you change the name of the business, you change the numbers, you know, maybe you add a little thing, whatever, you send it off. It's not a big deal. But when you're representing 23 bands and they're playing, you know, upwards of 100 gigs a year, you're talking about a lot of contracts. And these guys were still doing it that way. And it's not that uncommon. I meet a lot of businesses that are still doing things with pencil and paper and have 5 different databases that don't talk to each other. It's really not that uncommon because businesses, nonprofits and things, they grow from somebody. It's like one guy had an idea and then there's a second person comes in and they try to make it a little better. But then you get to like 5 people and you've been around for 15 years, your processes are super, super antiquated because you're not really able to cover everything. So, you know, I like to solve those problems. So like for them, I built a contract generator for them and it sends off a PDF, but it also now tracks like when their deposits are due and they can keep track of where their inbound money is, what things are late. They had no idea before. They were trying to keep spreadsheets and put everything in there. And after a month of them using this platform, the guy told me that I saved them 20 hours a week of manpower. So like those kinds of things, those hit home for me. Like, wow, he saves paying someone 20 hours a week. That's that's the kind of ROI I like to show for people.
And then you're like, you're renegotiating your contract with him and, you know, wanting 20 hours worth of pay.
Paid me handsomely to build it, and he pays me to maintain it, and he pays me to change things on it. And ultimately, I built that whole thing out. I built it out like as a prototype kind of thing, and I was going to build it all myself. And I ended up hiring somebody to do it, and we built the whole thing in 2 days. So, but the work was really in fleshing out the details.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. I'm involved in a project right now that I'm on a retainer with a specific group. And if the thing that I'm working on right now, I could easily charge what 5 times my normal monthly retainer rate is and have it one off and be done.
Yeah.
But the maintenance is where I'm going to go with it.
Well, I do both. I do both. You know, I mean, I definitely do both. And, you know, I host things for my clients too, because my clients, they're not coming to me saying I need a WordPress solution. So right. I would be doing them a disservice to say, okay, well, now you go find yourself a host and load WordPress, or, you know, I'll load it for you, but you make sure that the updates are done. Like, that's not the business they're trying to be in. So I need to just take care of my clients as best I can.
Like, and that's a great lesson for all the designers and developers out there, is that your job is not to integrate your clients into the WordPress community unless they want to be one. Okay. The thing is, find solutions for them. And you're going to find weird things. Like, if you introduce WooCommerce, you're going to have to find ways that the fulfillment people will actually see the orders and ship them out and all of that. And it doesn't always require them to log into WordPress to do it. So you've got to find solutions around that. And absolutely, so these are the kinds of things that set designers from developers, right? That's the difference. When you're a developer, you actually are creating solutions. When you're a designer, you're just making a web page.
So I even see it as like one more nuance. I see it as designers, developers, and like problem solvers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think because you're a developer, you're necessarily a problem solver, because I think that people can give you the requirements and you can program it out. Great.
Yeah, that's true. I guess problem solver is not, that's not the common term, I guess, but maybe we should start.
I don't know. Consultant, I guess.
WordPress,
you know,
problem solver. WPS. Yeah, I mean,
and that's a weird thing to try to, SEO for too, right?
Yeah. I mean, strategist is something people also say.
Yeah. I mean, whatever, you know, whatever the term of the day is, but I think that designers and developers, they could be that strategist, but they don't necessarily have to be.
Yeah, because not everybody understands the sales cycle or the fulfillment cycle or the logistics cycle, or understand, you know, some people that are in other countries besides the United States, they just don't understand the American marketing machine and some of the things that you have to do behind it as far as landing pages and upsells and all of those specific things.
So here's an example that I saw like many years ago that I just never understood how people could do this. So there was a big wave of like restaurant themes, right?
Yeah.
You go on ThemeForest and you can see them. So like, what are key things that a restaurant needs? They need a menu post type, right? They need a calendar function, maybe a lot of restaurant bars.
A flash powered header.
Yeah, flash powered header. Yeah. But there's like some basic things they need, and then you quickly get to the thing that they would like to have, that theme developers now have said, oh wow, this would be a cool problem to solve, and that's reservations.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is that if you use WordPress, if you let people book reservations on your website, you have to use that. When you do it at your physical location too, when somebody calls you, you need to log into WordPress and book the reservation. Otherwise, the day is going to come that you're going to be overbooked. So it's an inventory problem. But if you deal with inventory on your website, if it's a fixed inventory, you must use that inventory system with your phone. When, you know, when people call you on the phone, or you have to interface with that system somehow. But it's not as simple as just making a theme and doing that. You're talking about business practices now.
Yeah, I've done a number of different restaurant sites, and even in the sense of not just reservations, where it's more immediate as far as the time frame, but things like catering, you know, that's still time-based, but usually a week in advance. Yeah, but I mean, there, and then you can integrate even further into third-party platforms like OpenTable and integrate that into WordPress, and then use
but
that.
But there's no themes on ThemeForest that are taking it to that level.
No, you're right.
And especially right, 4 or 5 years ago, they weren't taking it to that level.
Yeah, yeah, and you see the same wave as far as real estate sites and dentists and lawyers and all that, as far as the stock themes. So that's a good tip also for you designers and innovators out there and fellow problem solvers, is think outside the box. Look at a theme, look at all the different trends that are out there on ThemeForest, and see what you can do that further enhances the businesses that are contained in those niches, and you've got a winner.
And it's going to get better now. The REST API, right? Like, I know I'm like the 1 millionth person to
say
this.
The flying cars are coming, yes.
But it is going to give you that ability for web platforms that already exist. Now they're going to be able to talk to each other and do some of those things. But those functions weren't really there. And so I always struggled with that. Like, oh, let me, you know, I've had many clients that are restaurants, bars, just from playing in a band. I got to meet a lot of those people. So I definitely
have
done a lot of
those
websites.
You're the first one that's ever said talk to each other. So explain that.
Oh, like just the idea to be able to pull information, like let OpenTable push information to your website, or you push information to OpenTable.
Okay.
You know, and it depends on the API of who you're talking to, whether, you know, or it's a conversation. Are they listening or are they just talking? Is it a megaphone or are they taking information too? So you have to know what you're dealing with.
Because I used to service a client that did EDI, which is electronic data interchange. And that was what they did. What EDI did is they were kind of middleware, kind of the Zapier of commerce. And sometimes this is just physical commerce. So Walmart has a specific system in which their API talks. And if you use, you know, whatever, Inventory X, as far as your inventory management system and your fulfillment and order system, then Walmart wants you to hook to them so they can start making orders. And so there's a whole kind of middleware around adapting from this software platform to that software platform. And since you put it that way, I'm wondering if WordPress may be able to take some of that business as far as a conduit.
Well, it's still going to take somebody, like, making that, you know. You look at like the work that Web Dev Studios is doing right now, and they're bringing like Microsoft to WordPress, but they're kind of the conduit. You know, now it's real labor intensive. They took like the Microsoft Developer Network. It's almost 11,000 sites, like 10,800 something sites, and they took that and they brought that into one WordPress multi-site. But they're pulling information in. It's just when you do it with the API, it's not. It can happen in real time in multiple places. It's, you know, near real time kind of stuff. So it's, you know, it's WordPress is sort of working in that function already, I guess is what I'd say, in taking existing data and bringing it into WordPress. It's just it's going to happen in more of a real time fashion.
So you organized WordCamp Minneapolis 2013 and 2014, and something happened after that to where you said, you know what, I'm going to organize my own conference. So tell us the genesis of Prestige.
Man. Well, first off, I moved from Minneapolis to New Jersey.
Ah, okay. Well, that's as good a reason as ever to not be able to organize it.
Yeah, so I handed it off to a guy named Chris Doman, and he did last year, 2015, and then I think he's handed it off now. Maybe Michelle Schulp, I think, is going to do 2016. It was never me. I just was the guy who said, like, let's do this. I did it with a guy named Justin Fole. He's one of the partners over at Nine Seeds. The two of us, we were pretty active in the local meetup group, and we just said, let's get a WordCamp back here, because we were traveling to other WordCamps and thought, you know, it's kind of criminal for us to be going to other WordCamps and not have one here at home. So we did it, but I just was the guy that initiated it all. But I did have a team of people that helped me, and, you know, I could have never done it all by myself. But, you know, moving forward, I wanted to figure out what I wanted to do. I had spent a couple of years organizing these conferences, being very active in meetup groups, and spoke at a bunch of WordCamps around the country. And I just felt I owed it to myself to do something with the time, all the time that I put into WordCamp. So it was all volunteer. I didn't get paid for any of it. I think it's almost the opposite of payment. Like, you really, you're not even really, like, you don't get any type of sponsorship or anything. You really get no credence for it, the fact that you put all this time in to make this great event. So I just thought, you know, I should do something with this. Otherwise, why did I waste the time to learn the ins and outs of this? I should try something. And, you know, I was a little scared to do it, honestly. And Josh Broughton and I had become friends through WordCamp Minneapolis. He came and spoke at 2013. That was the first WordCamp he ever spoke at. And then he spoke at many more and spoke at in San Francisco that same year. You know, he really did a great job. He's a great speaker. And I think that, you know, the two of us just kind of pushed each other to do it. I don't know that I would have done it by myself, because I just don't know that I would have taken the chance on it. It felt a little risky. And, you know, I had to decide to do it, or we had to decide to do it, really. And we had to decide to do it and, you know, name a date, name a place. And then we had to start selling tickets and, you know, get sponsors, get speakers. But we were trying to sell something that had never existed before, and it's hard. You have to sell it to every person that is involved, every sponsor, every speaker, really every attendee, too. You have to touch them all.
Well, you've done 3 prestige conferences in the last 2 years, right? One last year, two this year?
Yeah, within the last 9 months, 10 months.
So within the last 9 months, which is just – kind of crazy, because
it is.
You know, I'm used to conferences being annually, and yet you're like, hey, a couple months have gone by, I'm bored, let's whip one up. You know, obviously it's a lot harder than that, but wow, I mean, you're rocking and rolling. And I find it interesting that you live in Jersey, yet you have a team of people back here in Minneapolis, and you worked with them and were able to put on the event in Minneapolis. You just had to do a long drive to get there, to be there in person.
There was actually only one person. There's only one person on the team that was from Minneapolis, one person from South Dakota, and another person from New Jersey who moved from Minneapolis to New Jersey.
So how in the world do you have all these different people in these different areas come up and organize a conference in Minneapolis? How did that work? What were the logistics behind that?
Well, I was just saying today that if I had to consider, you know, I was in the military for 11 years. I moved around a lot. So, like, when you ask me where I was from at different times, I would probably give you a different answer. But now that I'm 41 years old, I have a keen sense of what my hometown is. And my hometown is where I live now, in Kearney, New Jersey. It's where I grew up. It's where I lived until I was in high school. And everything else I did was just kind of, like, stops along the way. But this will always be my hometown. Minneapolis is, like, my WordPress hometown. It's where I learned WordPress. It's where I went to the meetups and learned from people. It's where I went to the meetups and taught people. It's, you know, I think it's the best WordPress community in the country of anywhere that I've been, and I've been to a lot of them. Not because they make the most money, because that's not the shit that I, sorry, that's not the stuff that I think is important.
Sorry, we had Triple J on a couple weeks ago.
That's not the stuff that I think is important, though. What I think is important is people who are willing to share with each other, like, everything. And Minneapolis, it just doesn't get better than that. The people there, like, I have a lot of love for all the WordPress people. Some of my best friends have come out of being in that community. So when it came time for where was I going to do it, you know, it was really a no-brainer. Minneapolis was the first one. I already knew a venue because I had done a couple WordCamps there and really got to know the people at the venue very well and really liked them. And it just seemed like the natural place to do it. But the thing I'm leaving out is that the second Prestige Conference was in Las Vegas. And so we've done 3, none in the place where really any of us live. So it's a little bit trying to do that, but it's worked out. And, you know, we'll probably always do one in Minneapolis every year, I would think. But we'd like to do one in the wintertime, maybe in a little warmer place. Vegas wasn't the place for us. It wasn't, I think we sold 2 tickets to people that actually live in Las Vegas.
Wow.
So when everybody's flying in to go to it, I don't know. I think a big part of it, I mean, you were in Minneapolis. I think you would get the sense that a lot of those people knew each other. A lot of those people were friends. And it's a pretty happening scene there.
Now, have you considered the model of maybe doing more satellites of, you know, I'm not saying become like WordCamps where they're everywhere every week, but maybe getting more boots on the ground in other areas that can help facilitate those things?
Well, originally I did hope to do that. We had, you know, Josh and I, our original plan was to do one a quarter and to move it around. So I probably didn't answer Jeffro's question, is why did I not do a WordCamp and why did I do something else? So it kind of plays into this, I guess, too. So
yeah, Prestige, I found out the hard way, is not a WordCamp.
But so if we go back in Skype and look at the original interview that Jeffro did with me, and that's what he was all about, was how is this different than WordCamp? And I never really wanted it to be compared to a WordCamp because it's not even remotely close to a WordCamp. It's nothing like the WordCamps I organized. I wanted to do something totally different. And there were some things in organizing a WordCamp that I felt my hands were tied in. For whatever reason, there were things that I wasn't allowed to do. And there were things that, the way the rules are set up, that I think are shortcomings to putting on the best possible event. So I wanted to try to change a few of those variables and see how it worked out. But doing it in different cities, one of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to have, like, you know, when you do a development environment, it's always like local host. So I wanted to have a local host that was somebody that was in tune with the community and that could bring us in there and help us provide something to that community that they needed. And I wanted to give them credit for that. I wanted to, if they had a business, I wanted to help push their business and say, hey, that they are a local host sponsor to this. They didn't give money, but they gave their time and, you know, their effort to make this the best possible event for your community. And that's something that we weren't allowed to do, or you're still not allowed to do in a WordCamp environment. So that was one of the nuanced differences. Doing it in Las Vegas, it's what it really comes down to for putting on one of these conferences. It may look easy from the outside, but it's really not. There's so many things you have to think of. I have a great team that takes care of a lot of this. I'm really only responsible for a couple pieces of this whole thing, and very little of the operations, day-to-day kind of stuff do I have to do because I'm busy doing my other work. But I have assembled a good team, and I think that the marketing is the hardest part of it. Getting people to actually show up and pay you money to come to your event. That's the hardest part. So,
well, let's talk about some of those people. Now, we've talked now just about the back end and starting the conference and your motivations and things. Let's talk about who Prestige Conference is for. Let's get into that demographic, and then let's talk a little bit about what the presentations are and your vision is for it.
So the demographic is really not for necessarily...
Jeff.
It's, well, I don't agree with that, though. I think that, like, I think you watched a video today, right, Jeffro? So now if you saw that before you went into the rest of the sessions, could you agree that maybe you would have...
I would see two sessions that resonated with me and not just one because of that video I saw today.
Sure, now, why do you think
that? Two sessions is good. Two sessions is a lot.
Yeah. Now, so why does... What's the demographic? And then let's get into the psychosis here as to why Jeff thinks he's not
that. Doesn't think it applies. Yeah, yeah. So the demographic is really for people who are running a business and want to improve, or people that want to run a business and want to get, you know, want to get some information on how to do that, want to meet people and talk about how to do that. But it also has proven to be a great recruiting tool for people who are running businesses that want to get, you know, people who are thinking about business to work for them. And that's where I was, right? Like, I had people working for me that didn't necessarily care about running a business. That's why they wanted to come work for me. But Heather Bruner, I saw this tweet at maybe 5 months ago, and it still resonates with me. And it was the idea that when students start thinking like business owners, they make great employees. And I can't agree with that more.
So, Jeff, here's where you're not thinking in this whole scenario. It may not be for you in the sense that you may not be a business owner that's doing business online, but darn sure the readers of the Tavern are, or a great majority of them. So it would behoove you to pay attention to the things that they're paying attention to so that you can get a better scope of what to write about.
I agree completely. And to meet people who are doing big things in business.
Yeah. So WordPress really is just maybe the one thing they might have in common, maybe as a facilitator or a platform, but that might not even be the case at all. They might not even use WordPress, period, right?
Well, it comes down to, so when you go to put one of these on, right, if you were going to put on a conference tomorrow, who would you have speak at it? It would be people that you already know.
Oh, yeah.
So people you already know, if you work in WordPress and organize conferences around WordPress and speak at conferences around WordPress, the people that you know are probably WordPress people.
Right.
So the first conference, it was pretty much all WordPress speakers, and you know, attendees were all WordPress people too. Mm-hmm. And you know, we do tend to focus on that piece, and we do, you know, we'll do sessions about WordPress plugins, WordPress, you know, the WordPress ecosystem, WordPress products, things like that. But we don't want to only look to WordPress people to you know, to gain these lessons, because WordPress is only 11 years old. So if we only use WordPress businesses to learn from, we're sort of shooting ourselves in the foot.
Right.
But when you bring in those other people, they're not going to talk about WordPress. So we really try to keep the topics on business. The conversations end up going into WordPress in the after parties, in the networking times, without a doubt. And we want to facilitate that. But if you're not a WordPress person, you could still gain a lot from this conference.
So what other conferences have you seen out there? And I'll give you some examples of ones I've gone to that are not WordPress related that may give you inspiration for this. Like, I've been to a lot of the affiliate summits. I've been to, you know, Search Engine Strategies, SMX, Social Media World, all of those. Do any of those inspire you to do any of the stuff that happens at Prestige?
I've never been to any of those conferences.
Wow,
so no.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Wow. Anything, I mean, is there any kind of crossover in any other kind of niche conference out there?
I've never been to a conference, per se, that is out, like a tech conference that's outside of the WordPress system, I guess. So, you know, the one guy that really motivates me is, I went to the Tony Robbins Unleash the Power Within,
yep,
whatever, and I saw him change a lot of people's lives. And so that is sort of a motivator for me, is that I look forward to, like, 5 years from now, like, the next huge thing, like the next Gravity Forms, you know, somebody who can match that level of success saying, hey, I got the motivation because I came to Prestige and heard so-and-so speak. Jennifer Bourne, you know, taught me about branding at Prestige, and since then I can't handle all the clients that I get. Those are the kinds of things that I look forward to hearing. I just want to help people, like, achieve their dreams through whatever it is that they want to do.
That's an interesting take, because I'll tell you, you may want to try this, but I often go to conferences that aren't necessarily 100% in my wheelhouse, because when it comes to conversations about digital marketing or WordPress, then I get to be Yoda in that after party as far as what's happening and what's going on. And also, Jeff, this is for you. You know, there's nothing saying that you can't take a look at some of these things and, you know, just strategize, learn what platforms people are using and, you know, use their techniques. And even if you don't use it in business, you know, run the tavern like a business, and, you know, maybe you'll gain something from either a project management standpoint or at least expenses or some of those things.
Well, I've reached a point now where I'm probably going to have to start going to conferences like CMS Expo, if that's still on. I don't know if they just had the last one or not, but sort of go to some of these other conferences with different content management systems to see how other people are doing things, because I've been stuck in the WordPress bubble for so long, and I haven't ventured out of the bubble to see. I used to love seeing what Joomla's doing and Drupal's doing, and I used to use those different CMSs, and I just haven't done that for a while, so I think it's time to branch out and rejuvenate my fire and say, hey, look, these guys are doing something really awesome, and I think WordPress can learn a thing or two.
I think you'd be shocked at what's out there that can't even do what WordPress is doing yet. Yet they're getting $40,000 a month as a vendor to lease this software to somebody.
Without a doubt. I totally get what you're saying too, Marcus, but I think the thing for me is that I don't really put this conference on to find clients. Mm-hmm. I put it on to learn about running my own business,
mm-hmm.
and that's where the you know, really the genesis of that came from, like, scratch your own itch. And
right, right. But I imagine some of the attendees, that's their MO, right? They want to do the, you know, how do I find more traffic? How do I make more money? How do I do things as simple as what we referred to earlier of just make, how do I make a contract?
Yeah, and I think that your advice, it'd be perfect advice to give them. Like, you should go to places where people need your skills, but there aren't a million other people there that already know how to do what you do. That's great advice.
Yeah, because you'll always learn something from them, too.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
You'll overhear somebody having a conversation about a specific platform, and you Google it, and it changes your world as far as what you thought was possible out there.
Yeah, so the things that really hit, like, so the first prestige we had an interview. So one thing we do differently as well is we try to do these one-on-one interviews that we try to make them a little more personal and dig a little deeper and ask questions that people probably wouldn't cover if they were just standing up on the stage and got to make their own slides, because they might not, you know, they just might not, people don't like to toot their own horn, whatever it is, but we sort of take it on a case-by-case basis and how we want to set each of these up. So the first one, we did an interview where Josh Broughton interviewed Jake Goldman on growing from 1 to 85 people in 3.5 years with no capital funding. And it was awesome session. It was like 90 minutes long, and they just covered so much stuff. Jake had, you know, great charts and showed kind of his revenue growth compared to his manpower growths and when there were dips and explained why there were dips. And like the idea that once they grew to a certain point, they started taking on clients that worked on net 30s, net 60s, whatever. So they took on expense, but they didn't necessarily take money in the bottom line. So there were like there would be like a dip, but then you would see the next quarter, it would come right back. And those are things that maybe you wouldn't think about when you're building a business, one, and then have two, and then have three, and then you get to 35, and then you're dealing with a different level of client, and now there's these new problems. So it was interesting to get some of that insight from somebody who's been there and done it, and that's what really prestige is about. I always tell the speakers to give a 5-year younger version of yourself some advice.
That's a pretty cool way to look at it if you're a speaker, but we're talking about all this business stuff. What about the business of prestige? Now that it's not under the foundation, it's not a WordCamp, it's something you're helping to create. If you wanted to, you could possibly turn a profit from it, but at least when I attended, I think there were 100 people or fewer who attended in person, which I think is, I think you kind of want that in this event based on the atmosphere. And I think 2/3 of the overall, the large majority of the people who took in the information for Prestige were live streamers, free live streamers, actually, thanks to a sponsor you had. So what's the business of this conference look like for you? Do you just want to break even, or do you want to make a couple bones with it?
I would be remiss to say that I wouldn't like to make money from it. It's not really the motivation for it. I think I make money from it by learning the lessons the same reason the people go to attend it. And I think that I gain some really valuable tools from it. We have, you know, it hasn't cost me money yet in the grand scheme of it. The first two were, you know, moderately profitable. And the third one was about a break-even situation, I would say. You know, I don't even have all this stuff back. We haven't got billed by the venue or any of that stuff yet. It takes a little while, but it, you know, it hasn't, I haven't lost money on it, and that's, you know, probably the most important thing to me, I guess, at this time, because we put so much time and effort into it. To have to pay for it too would be probably too much, but we've had great support from sponsors that we really believe in and really believe in what we're trying to do, so that piece of it has been pretty awesome.
Awesome. So there is one thing, I want to almost switch topics here, but it's kind of related to prestige, but just something I felt was definitely worthy of talking about. Marcus and I talked about this subject a good bit last week, and I had a number of comments on the tavern when I wrote about it, but you had a one-on-one interview with Jay Armada, who has gone through Sukiri and ended up, he's now at a great position over at WebDev Studios. He's got a great family. And you guys were talking about a lot of different things about his journey from his time in the military and how that's transpired into Sucuri and Web Dev Studios and things to think about, and overall, you know, when to make that next move, to move on to the next big thing. And one of the things he ended up saying was family first. Now, this isn't the first time I've heard this advice. I've heard it from Chris Lemma, and I've also heard it from some other people. And generally, they're either in their second or third startup, they're older, late 30s, early 40s, or maybe they're well-to-do. Maybe they've got a couple more zeros in the bank account than I do, which, I don't know. But I started thinking about it, and how can I take advice like that, family first, which I think is something I don't think anybody could argue or would argue that family first is very important in spending time with your family. But how do entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, even distributed workers working alone, I mean, they hear this advice, family first, from these people in these types of positions. How do people make that work? And I think you had a great take on that, and that you're sort of along the lines of self first.
I mean, it's like words, right? What do words mean? What does family first really mean? So when I hear family first, what it means to me is that I feel like life is just a series. It's like it's a decision tree, right? Everything we do we do A or do we do B? It just naturally happens. You go down this decision tree. And to me, family first sort of sounds like whenever presented with a choice, I always pick my family first. Is that a fair way to interpret it?
That's what I would assume it would be, yeah.
I could see that direction.
So to me, when people say family first, it means that no matter what the decision is, I always err on the side of my family.
Okay.
So when I wake up in the morning, and do I go to work or do I stay home with my family?
Obviously, you go to work.
And why? Then the argument is, well, you have to provide for your family. Well, that's a slippery slope, right?
Yes.
That's how you end up in a startup working 120 hours a week trying to provide for your family. So I don't know. I'm a real believer in that nobody can bring happiness to another person. Happiness can only come from within yourself. And for me to be the best functioning member, and I got some flack over this from my wife even, to say that I don't believe in family first, I believe in self first, you know. But I explain it to her, you know, but it's just the idea that I feel like you have to be whole as a person. It's like a relationship, right? You can't be in a solid relationship until you're good on your own. And I think people understand that in theory, but I don't think people necessarily practice that. And when you have kids, it's really easy to always make the best decision for your child. But sometimes you have to give your child tough love. Sometimes, you know, and it's not the most fun thing to do, and they don't feel like you're putting them first. But it's all, you know, nuanced sort of decisions. But I think that you really have to take care of yourself, and I think that the whole person, you have to be good mind, body, spirit before you can, you know, start dealing with other people.
So instead of family first or work first or self first or whoever first, instead of one or the other, does it come back to more like a balance between everyone, trying to get a balance where you're spending some time here, but you're also doing some great things in your business, and you somehow make time for yourself as well? I mean, that balance is so hard to achieve, if it even exists.
Well, I mean, you're like talking about a state of equilibrium, right? Where everything is perfect and it never gets worse, it never gets better.
And it never happens.
I mean, it can for some people. I think that you can, you know, it's all physics, right? High highs on a roller coaster have to have low lows on the roller coaster. You can't just go high and then come back level. It's, you know, things have this, you know, bell pattern to them. And I think that if you don't have a lot of, you know, really high highs, you won't have a lot of really low lows. But
I know what I'm doing. I'm moving to Colorado where I can, well, never mind. All right, continue.
But it just depends on kind of the life. And does that make sense? It just kind of depends on the life that you want to have, I think. If you want to do really exciting things, then when you don't do exciting, if you take your wife on 10 vacations this year and you don't take her on vacation next year, she's going to notice.
You got that right. Huh.
But if you never go on vacation, she might never complain about it. So,
you know, I know what I'm doing. I ain't taking her on vacation.
Does that make sense, Marcus? You get that?
Yeah, and it's a lot of it's to do with income and your financials, because when you're constantly chasing a dollar and trying to find your next, you know, literally your the thing that's going to buy your next load of groceries, then that becomes increasingly more difficult because you're stuck in that mode and you have to kind of isolate yourself while you're doing all of that. And it becomes this perpetual cycle that becomes harder and harder on you and everybody else around you. And that's why that balance is, to me, the whole wick that lights that fuse is driven by money.
Yeah, and I think that it comes, like, you have to be able to forecast it and see that you're, like, I think what you're talking about is, like, crisis mode, right? Where it's like, I have to find business today. So whatever I have to do to find business today, I have to do. And that's usually the hardest time to find work, too. It's funny how it all works out. When you don't need work, then it seems to come around. But when you do need it, it's really hard to make it happen. And it's hard to then sell yourself for as much as you're worth too, because you don't want to lose the opportunity, and it all plays in. But
oh yeah, and then even like I'm in that situation, and for me, you start to second guess yourself when you don't get these other opportunities, or they don't come your way, or you don't get the bid, or whatever. You're like, what happened to me? You know, like, did I lose my skill? Did I lose my sales ability? Did these references not, aren't they good anymore? Things like that. So it makes it even more difficult, you know, especially with all the rest of the stress of financials going on. So
yeah, and I sort of stopped ever thinking those things when I don't get a bid. You know, I've lost some bids that, like, I thought they were, like, they was even told that these are, it's a done deal. But then, you know, then somebody above them comes in and says, oh, well, I want you to take 3 bids before we award this.
Yeah, and or my nephew can do it, yeah.
But sometimes you might be the second or third bid, and the person putting out the RFP already knows who they're going to pick. They're just taking those other 2 bids because they have to. Yeah. And they have to do due diligence and ask for your references and call them. And then what are they going to do? They're going to go in and say, yeah, well, we checked 2 other people out, but we still think the guy that we had is the best.
Yeah, and it's hit me to the point where I'm even thinking, like, what the hell have I been doing for 4 years? I should have learned this and this and this instead, you know. So it makes you even wonder your own career path sometimes. But, you know, hey, I'm strong, and I'll get over it and everything else, so nobody's got to worry or give me weird tweets or things like that.
but if they need, you know, what content strategy really is your thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they can hit me up for that.
Yeah, definitely. But
so, Jeff, that's 2 sides of the work-life balance. It's not always this perfect, you know, let's enjoy dinner, then I'll spend, you know, an hour reading Gizmodo, and then, you know, whatever, or the tavern.
I think people who say family first, too, and have done startups, they've been given, like, ultimatums in their life, maybe. And
I need
to start thinking about this differently. You know, I don't know that, but I think that's oftentimes... You know, it's really easy to get out of balance and want to work more and want to make more money and think that that's the best thing to do. But, you know, when your wife tells you, hey, like, you're working too much and this isn't working for me, well, then you start thinking about it differently. And, you know, you might have to compensate a little bit. And maybe more often than not, you do pick, you know, spending time with your wife versus going to work or going to the gym. But those are the things that I think are a slippery slope. When you're not going to the gym and you let yourself get out of shape and then you don't feel good about yourself, it's really hard to be positive in your family when you're not feeling good about yourself.
Right.
Yeah, and I wonder how hard it is for some people out there to try and convince their significant other that, hey, I'm putting in 80 hours now so I could spend 40 hours a week with you, you know, a couple years from now. I wonder, you know, I guess your partner or significant other has to be really strong, or how do you even convince them that that's what's going to happen? I mean, or that's why you're spending 80 hours concentrating on work instead of them. I mean, geez, that takes a special other person to stand by you why you do that.
I mean, a marriage is a business partnership, no matter what. You know, sure, you're in love, but it's still a business partnership. You're tying your financial status to another person. And if you don't have buy-in on the strategy of where that business is going, you're going to have trouble if you haven't communicated that well to your partner. You're going to have trouble all the way through. You know, the communication is critical. especially with somebody that you spend so much time with and have to sleep next to in a bed, you know, you don't want them to be pissed off at you. So you have to communicate those things and have buy-in. I think that's critical. But if you don't have that, you're sort of chasing, you know, you're flying the plane, but you don't know where the target is. So do you take off to the east or the west? You're really not sure where you're going, so you're just burning fuel.
Awesome. I'm glad you found a way to bring that analogy into the show. I was waiting for you to do that. That's a great analogy. So before we wrap it up here with Yukiko, I know J.R. Armada, he's into jiu-jitsu. You are into jiu-jitsu. How does that play into your role of just everyday life? I mean, does it help you focus in your business? And you know, how does it play into your everyday decisions?
Well, so I actually talked about this tonight at dinner, and it's the idea that like you can go work out, right? You can go run on a treadmill. Marcus, do you use a treadmill? You ever do that?
Yeah, I have that. I have the elliptical too.
What do you think about when you're on the treadmill?
Nothing.
Honestly, what do you really think about?
Not falling over.
Getting off the treadmill, right?
Yeah,
like when can I be done with the treadmill?
Right.
Or you probably think about your financial stuff sometimes too when you're on the treadmill, right?
No, it's the shower.
No. All right. So, but there's these, like, a lot of people when you're running on a treadmill or you're on an elliptical, it doesn't really take much to kind of keep going. You just have to keep moving your legs and not fall.
Right.
And I always found that when I was on a treadmill, I was always thinking about other stuff. I wasn't ever thinking about, like, oh, how's my form? How are my feet hitting the ground? I wasn't thinking about the art or act of running. But when you're doing jiu-jitsu, you don't think about anything but the task at hand. You can't think about anything else. You can't think, oh, my God, I got to pay this bill. Like, oh, my God, my arm just got ripped off. You have to be focused on what you're doing right there. So from that standpoint, it's really helpful. I think it's also a very expressive art, and it helps you, like, gain confidence. It helps you gain confidence in, you know, in if you were ever to find yourself in an altercation, you have more confidence in that. I don't see any negatives to it, really. I think it can only help you with your focus and help you with your fitness and help you to be able to defend yourself, too.
Yeah, if there's one thing I'm not doing in my lifespan, it's getting you upset. You know, getting involved with you in a tussle, no way.
But it's like Mr. Miyagi, right? Like you learn karate so that you don't have to fight.
Right.
I can't imagine getting into a fight with somebody now because it's not my vibe. It's not what I'm about. And
well, you know, my training in high school was learning how to hop fences, and you know, as long as I could put enough fences between me and the other dude, I win.
Well, you know, that's the thing they teach you. That's what they taught at my school. They teach that in the first jiu-jitsu class, like your introduction class, is that the best thing for you to do is to leave the altercation. So they teach you how to get up, you know, in a way that's backing away from the opponent and then run. That's the best thing you can do. But if they catch you, then what do you do? And that's really kind of the art. If they catch you and you end up on the ground, now you're kind of in your home base.
Well, I'm so glad that I was fast because I was usually the reason why the altercation existed. So, you know, hopping fences, that was my specialty when I was a youngin', and being fast.
Nice.
Awesome, man. So thanks for being on the show. I mean, I don't have any other questions for you. I mean, we could spend a whole hour talking about music. I know that, but we got
to... Yeah, we didn't even get to music, man.
We got to roll on to our plug-in picks of the week. But anything you want to tell us? Are you working on Prestige 4? Can you give us any details?
We are working on it right now. We're in our initial stages. So we're sort of transitioning the conference to be more focused on the live stream because we, you know, when it comes down to it, like, you know, you said two-thirds, or I don't remember the number you used, but it really ultimately ends up being, you know, 90% of the people end up being online versus...
And I was one of those online, by the way, and I got to commend you. That stream was excellent as far as the slides being legible and you know, displaying the slides during the stream and going back and forth. It was great.
I had some family issues for Vegas. I don't want to get into too much of that, but I had some medical things in my family, and we were expecting a baby, and I didn't get to go to Prestige 2. So it was really a super hard thing for me because the whole prestige thing was really my idea, but the team was so good that the whole thing went off without me having to go there, and the event was only like 5 months old at the time. And so that speaks to the quality of the team that I have together, and I never would have imagined that to be possible. But I was at home, and I had to watch Prestige 2 on the live stream, and I was blown away by it, honestly. The quality of it was really good, and I'm glad to hear that translates to other people, too. Sure. But I was glad to, in some ways, to go through that because it forced me to see it. And when you put on an event, there's no way that you would sit through the live stream, like that you would just force that to happen. But it also helped me feel connected to the event when I couldn't be there.
Yeah, it was something to see. I really enjoyed it. And it's even, I don't even think WordCamp comes close as far as what they've done on the streams. It just, they didn't have the whole setup that you did with TriCaster and all of that. So it was pro. It was pro all the way.
Well, so that was another one of my sticking points with the foundation that they didn't allow me. The first year I was able to hire the team that I used to do the video for all the prestiges. I used them in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
In 2014 I used them.
Six Pro Media, right?
Yeah, and they're awesome. And then 2015, they weren't allowed to hire them because it was too expensive. But from my standpoint, when I put on an event, I mean, and you're an analytics guy probably with, data online, yeah. And these things spike. Like, we had like 8.2 million imprints for the Prestige Conf hashtag, which is the best we've ever had by a long shot. But it all happens in that 48 hours of the event, a little bit leading up and a little bit after. And then it's like I mention every 4 days until it's nothing. So if you put all this work into it, you work on these things for months and months and months. To me, the video is all you have left after the event. You have the memories of the people that were there, the t-shirt, and the video. And I've watched so many videos on WordPress TV where the camera is on the other side of the room, and right. I have my volume all the way up on my computer, and I still can't hear them. And to me, it just takes away. Like, these people put in all this time to put together a presentation, and we count on volunteers to capture that information. Volunteers to be videographers who aren't videographers in their day job. But for some reason, there's so little emphasis put on that, which I think is wrong, but that's my opinion. I voiced that opinion, and it wasn't agreed upon. So now when I do my event, I take that differently. I take different action on that, I guess. But I'm glad to hear that because I think that that is critical, and I think that these videos can continue to give people quality learning for years to come.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I had a chance to watch one of the recorded video sessions today, and got to witness firsthand how awesome it is to have the speaker in one corner and the slides in the other corner, and then it goes to the speaker full screen, and the quality is great. There's no hiccups, and I'm like, okay, yeah, they should definitely hire a long-term contract with PixPro Media.
I actually told him to approach the foundation because when they do WordCamp, right, you have four tracks. So he has a team of guys that come in, and they bring in the video cameras, and they bring in their own audio and everything. And, I don't know if you noticed it, but every speaker is double mic'd, one for the house and one for the recording. We do get a live patch from the house if possible, and at the place we had it in Minneapolis, it is possible. But if that goes down, we have a backup too. So they're just pros at what they do. And the idea of having a volunteer videographer is the same. Expecting somebody to do that for nothing is the same as when people approach me and say, hey, will you build my website for free because it'll be easy for
right.
you? It's the same mentality, and to me it's disrespectful. If that person wants to volunteer, great. But I'm not just going to belittle that guy's career and say, oh, well, if you won't do it for nothing, then I'll just have some college kid do it and, run this video camera. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. But everybody has different priorities with this, and I put all this time into it. I want to make sure that they're documented in the best way possible.
So just to quickly wrap up, you are working on Prestige 4, but we don't know date, time, or anything else yet.
Yeah, now we're looking for something in the late winter time, maybe early spring, and we want to do something, more of a southerly direction.
Please.
Southern California, Florida,
Orange County.
Orange County. You know, we're open to a lot of things right now. That will probably get locked down in the next coming weeks.
Marcus Couch's house, we can have a carne asada for lunch.
Yeah, we don't need to be able to house that many people, really. So,
well, no, I think Jeff's exaggerating.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not really thinking your house, but I'm just saying, like, for if people out there, like, want to bring something like this to their town, and we've had, you know, good feedback from people that wanted us to go to, you know, we looked at Seattle, we've looked at Miami, looked at Orlando, and those are all kind of players, but we need somebody that knows the lay of the land in those places. When we did the Las Vegas one, we had John Hawkins helped us, and he lives out there, and he helped us kind of set up, you know, the venue and, you know, setting up hotels and things, and just thinking about some of the logistics that you won't think about if you don't live there. So we need somebody to help with those things.
So a little bit like the WordCamp US team, where you have some of the main organizers of these events, but whatever city you pick, getting the organizers for that WordCamp in that city to help you along because they know the venues, they know the city, they know the hotels, and it can make it a smoother event.
Definitely.
Awesome. So thanks a lot for being on the show and telling us everything about your history and WordPress. You know, I won't go as far as to say, you know, Chris Lama, where he came out of nowhere and you came out of nowhere, but it's been a pleasure getting the chance to know you both on a personal and professional level, and thank you again for extending the opportunity for me to see Prestige live in person. That was a hell of an experience that whole weekend, and your team did a fantastic job, and looking forward to possibly watching the next couple of Prestige Live conferences or Prestige conferences live via the live stream. And I wish you all the best, man. Continued success on this conference because it's you seem to have a good thing rolling. You have a good team. So, I mean, just use that momentum to its best use.
Thanks. Thank you. And Marcus, I hope to meet you at one of these events someday. It'd be great.
Yeah, I'd like to actually one day be a speaker at Prestige. I think it's probably more up my alley than even WordCamp because it has such a business-centric audience. So I hope to do that one day.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it in the future. And we're very hands-on. You know, the other failure, I think, in doing WordCamps is that all the speakers are volunteers, so you get what they want to talk about. So it's sure. When I look at it from a, like, I come from a training background in the military, and to put together a good training plan and have things flow through the weekend, and I don't know if you got a sense of that, but I really try to have things kind of flow and make sense.
Everything was on time, on the money.
But, I mean, just content, too. Like
content, too.
So we're really active with the speakers. You know, some of them, it's easy, you know, and then for Jake Goldman, for his first, it was an interview, too. It wasn't even slides. Josh and I probably spent 15 hours on Skype with him going over, you know, what are we going to talk about at this thing?
Really? Wow.
You know, so we're really hands-on with, that's the part that's the most important to me because I don't care about all the other things if the content isn't good. That's the most important thing to me, really.
So other than that, where can we keep tabs on you, the Twitter sphere, and are you going to any conferences coming up, whether they're WordPress related or not?
I don't have anything planned right now. I'd like to get down to Hampton Roads. I love the Rocket Genius guys, so I want to get down there and support them. And I'll probably hit WordCamp US, I would think, too.
Early December, okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I really have tentatively planned at this point. But
Hampton Roads is like the new Woodstock for WordPress. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, that's where it's going to go down.
And what will go down shall not be named. So. Yeah.
But personally, probably Facebook is probably the best place. You know, I know that's really kind of taboo in this WordPress ecosystem. But, Facebook to me is like it's an easier way to communicate. I don't piss people off because I'm trying to restrict things to 140 characters. I can actually say what I think and what I feel and explain it all in one thing and not have it taken out of context. So.
Still makes me mad.
What's that?
The things you say on Facebook.
It makes you mad?
No, I'm just messing with you. Come on, buddy. No, but I totally get it. So what's your name on Facebook? How can people find you there?
Everywhere online. I'm just Kiko Dorn, KikoDoran.
Fantastic, man. Thanks for coming on the show, and good luck with Prestige 4.
All right, thanks, guys.
And ladies and gentlemen, that was Kiko Dorn, and fantastic interview. Got to learn a bit about his history. both in the military and just as a developer overall. Marcus, I think we covered a lot of ground with that gentleman.
Yeah, and it's nice to know the background behind Prestige and some of the things that are to come, and certainly some of the logistics that it involved to create it. It's a lot harder than we would probably imagine.
So there's only one really sort of news story I want to talk about. It's a milestone, and it's sort of, I don't know, we'll see what Marcus thinks about this, but the WordPress plugin directory has actually surpassed 1 billion, that's what the pinky extended, total downloads. So it took about 9 years to do because the numbers, the counters started counting the downloads back in March 2006. And it took about 9 years for it to reach 1 billion. And I have ended up having a breakdown here between over the years. And yeah, it's definitely going way up. And in fact, 2014, last year, it was a total of 241 million downloads. And in August, from January 2015 to August, pretty much this month, it's 186 million. And a conservative prediction is that it will hit 300 million downloads for this year. So, considering WordPress powers 24.2% of the web, and more people are able to download plugins through the back end of WordPress, and you have all these different services that are coming up to make it easy to deploy bunches of these plugins or your favorites, I think we're going to see these numbers increase over time. In fact, a couple of people, Marcus, have said that we're going to hit downloads next year or early 2017. So it took 9 years to get the first, and some people are saying it's going to take 1 year or less to hit the second. I think it's going to take more than that, maybe 2 years, but it's definitely not going to take nine.
Hey, come on. WordPress, the language stuff could be coming out, and you could get an influx of people using WordPress in China and make that 2 billion in like a week.
You got that right.
So that's not really that far of a stretch. But I think definitely the aspect of being able to download and install WordPress plugins right in the dashboard completely accelerated the download count. And as we started getting more and more into just that static text search of plugins versus the cards and the logos and all of that, I think that you're going to get that even further as far as downloads. And that's probably what accelerated the growth, at least in the last 6 months or so. So I'm completely excited about it, obviously, as being the plugin critic. I pride myself on trying to make sure that those billion downloads don't turn into 700 million deletions as far as the plugin, right? So download something that's actually going to work rather than just blind downloading. But it's a good milestone. It's certainly one worth noting in the history of WordPress.
You know what's contributed to all the downloads are the WordPress Weekly plugin picks of the week. You know, I know a lot. As soon as the thousands of listeners that we have hear those plugin picks of the week, it's just common sense of them. They have to go. It's instinct. They have to go and download them and check them out because you mentioned them. We mentioned them on the show. So, we're probably responsible for a couple million. Maybe a couple hundred million, I'm not sure.
Well, all right, well, let's see if we can get 100 million and three here with the plug-in picks of the week. You ready?
Uh-huh.
It sounds like it. All right, the first one is called Site Import, and my first impression of this is real-time piracy finally comes to WordPress.
What?
This plug-in allows you to import the posts and items from other websites, and you don't even have to export anything from another website. It just basically goes and steals and extracts data directly from another website and makes them into WordPress items, including all the images, everything else, can download them right into the media library and put them in a nice gallery for you. Now, this is dangerous, but I want to tell you, if you out there are designers and someone has a website that they say, can you turn this into WordPress? This is probably a really good tool to do that, especially if they're using a different platform. So,
to import all the content from their...
Yeah. But, I mean, don't go ripping off Amazon and trying to make a WordPress clone of it. But it's a pretty good plugin, nonetheless, and it's called Site Import, and this is probably link bait, but go to the show notes and you can see the link to that one.
I am definitely going to try this out after the show. I gotta see if this works.
Good. I think it's an article-worthy plug-in as far as the tavern goes. The next one is called Follow Price, and this came to light at a perfect time because I was actually looking for something to do just this. It's a universal price and availability alert that works with WooCommerce that lets your visitors receive an email when the price changes on something that they've indicated and marked as a favorite, or if it's out of stock and it becomes available, it lets them know. So it's a very handy tool to get people back to your e-commerce site, back to WooCommerce, and buy. It's called Follow Price. And finally, this one's called Revision Strike. You know, WordPress builds up a pretty big, lofty chunk of revisions over time if you're doing a lot of post revisions. And while it's really nice to have that revision history, a lot of times you really don't ever want to go back to it for any reason. So Revision Strike is quite simply just a timer that gets rid of old versions and make sure that you're not kind of bloating out your installation with all of these other revisions in your post count. So it's called Revision Strike. It helps to clean that revision database. And those are my plug-in picks of the week.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, for sure. I'm going to have to try that site import. I think I could do a business with this, this plug-in.
You have a reason to go to Prestige now.
Oh, unbelievable. All right, so that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. Next week, we're going to have on, I believe it's Troy Dean of WP Elevation, and he's also hosted a couple of really cool WordPress, Future of WordPress roundtables, and we'll be talking to him about the business of WordPress and generally what he does in this WordPress ecosystem, so I'm looking forward to that.
He sells stuff. That's what he does.
He sells stuff. So let's see. That wraps it up for this episode of the show. You can find show notes for this episode and every other episode on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's JeffrR0, and Marcus.
You can find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, and also on Twitter at MarcusCouch.
So we'd really appreciate it if at this point in time you just stop the show and go over and give us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. 1-star, 5-star, it doesn't matter. Just tell us what you think of the show. And also give us a link drop of what site you maintain or what site you own or write at. We'll be able to say that on the show. Please, please, please give us a review. We love them. And with that said, everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday evening, I believe. I think it's going to be same show time. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your weekend and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.